The views and opinions of Muscle Minds is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Welcome to Muscle Minds with Dr. Scott Stevenson, Jordan Peters, and Scott McNally, part of the Advices Radio Network, a new voice in bodybuilding podcasting. Welcome back to a very special edition of Muscle Minds. I'm Scott McNally, and as always with me is Jordan Peters, Dr. Scott Stevenson, and today we have a very special guest. This is IFBB Pro, Sasan Harati. He turned pro at the British Championships, winning heavyweight and the overall in 2015. After that, he took fifth place at his pro debut at the Chicago Pro, sixth at the New York Pro this year, which was a stacked class, and then second at the California Pro. We just recently found out that Sasan is now working with Jordan Peters. If you guys are members over at the Trained by JP site, you've already seen them doing all sorts of videos together, training videos, conversation videos. If you're not signed up there, go check it out. Guys, everybody, I'm just going to turn the mic over to you. Scott, Jordan, Sasan, especially Sasan. Sasan, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, thank you. It's an honor to be on the show. Like I've said, it's the number one podcast that I listen to over and over again. So it's really cool to be on with you guys.
That's awesome, man. That blows me away that you listen. And thank you so much, because it's a huge, huge honor for us to have you here. And for us to be able to get to talk with you and Jordan. I'm so curious to hear about you guys training together and just so much about it. But I'm just going to kind of shut up for a minute and let everybody else talk. Jordan, how's it going with you, man?
Yeah, not too bad. All is well. Nothing really new to report my end, to be honest. Corin competed again at the weekend. So I'll give you guys a quick update on that. She looked really, really very good. It was probably the driest and the hardest and the most detailed we've ever seen her. And it was really, really cool. We had one of my Austrian friends help out with her peak. So we had like a three-way conversation on WhatsApp. And we did this all together to have her trying to look the best that we could. And his name is Stefan Kinzel. And he would be someone actually that would be fantastic to have on the show at some stage too.
Right on.
And he's very, very smart, very, very experienced. And the way in which we peaked her was totally different to anything I have done before. So initially for me, I actually just took a back seat and mostly just watched and asked questions and gave my input more so into knowing that, okay, Corinne is flat at this point still, like knowing what I know about her physique. So he used kind of my eyes as a gauge to, okay, how does she look compared to normal? And it worked really well. She sadly got fourth because she was too fucking dry. And the way in which she posed showed off the freakiness that she had going on. One of Scott's friends, Mike Gustavsson?
Gustavsson, yeah, he's from Sweden, so everyone says it the wrong way.
Yeah, he was there watching, and he messaged Scott straight away and said that he had her winning hands down from behind, and from the front she was kind of like a close second. But she was just too hard and too dry for that class. It's not really the criteria to be that dry and hard. But we can. It was fucking cool anyway. So. Really cool to see some of those lines and details like that. So when you kind of love that side of bodybuilding like we do, it's hard for Corinne because she's kind of surrounded by and influenced by people that love that freaky aspect of bodybuilding.
Yeah.
Like Dr. Scott has a massive influence on her, and he loves that crazy, dry, freakiness. And then like we're training with Sass, and then he has that same kind of look as well. Just crazy detail everywhere. So that's what she's aspiring to, and she hit it. But it's sadly just not quite the criteria. But if you look as good as that, then who really cares? that's kind of what... Kind of what I say, but we'll make some tweaks for the end of the year to be more in line with the criteria. So that's all from me. I'll pass over.
What does she have coming up next then? Anything? Because I know that she did Russia, and then which show was this one?
This was in Brazil.
Brazil. Okay.
This was in Rio, and then Rio. It's a 20-week gap now.
Okay.
Until one that's at the end of the year, so she needs to just. She'll come off of all of her supplements for 12 weeks, and then she'll only go back on for 8 weeks to dial it all back in. She doesn't obviously need very long to diet.
Yeah, I bet.
Because she only ever gets about 10 pounds off. And it seems as well that any muscle that she drops in the periods off come back on so fast that that's never a worry. So 12 weeks off again kind of gives her enough of a break. To then try to compete again at the end of the year. So that should be good.
So I guess the next person out of the group to step on stage is going to be Dr. Scott. Scott, how you feeling, man? You are, less than a week out now, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess it's 5 days.
Yeah, how's
it going? He looks ridiculous.
Yeah?
He looks ridiculous.
Well, before we go into that, I need to just say... I don't want to sound like a correction, but my buddy Mike was not only there watching, he was there winning.
Huh?
Oh, true. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all good. It's all good. He's so excited. Yeah. I'm so excited for him. Mike's 55 now. He won, and he's originally from Sweden. I want to tell his story just because I've known Mike for like 15 years. We've competed together probably at least 6 or 7 times back when I lived in Arizona. Like every show I did, he did, and vice versa, pretty much. Mike's competed in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s.
Wow.
He got his NABA. Maybe Jordan, you can explain it better than I can, because NABA and World Fitness Federation, WFF, are sort of co-joined in some way.
Yeah.
And so he's NABA, got his pro card through NABA here in the States. And that was kind of what he wanted. He competed at NPC for years, but he had competed with NABA when he was kind of coming up through the ranks. And Mike's got, talk about old school. Mike's got stories. He dieted down once, so he didn't have much money on nothing but potatoes and protein powder. Like nothing else.
Nice.
And got shredded. The first gym he trained in, there was... a rule, I think the rule, if I'm getting it right, was on barbells, you had to have at least a plate on any type of barbell press. Like, it just stayed on there all the time. It never came off. And on a squat rack, it was always 2 1/4 on the bar, you know, or 20 kilo plates at all times. And there was no HVAC in this gym. And he was in Sweden. They would shovel paths. Because the snow would come in through the windows, there was like a hole in the wall or something like that, and they would shovel paths to go from squat rack to press station or what have you. Just the kind of stuff that he's done. So he's been competing, you know, for as long as pretty much anybody I know. And finally, he won the Mr. Universe in Rio. So this was kind of like, and he looked just about as, he says... And I've seen his pictures. He used to, when he was younger, he had hair. Now he shaves. He looked just like Roger Daltrey, like literally.
No kidding.
He could have gone as Roger Daltrey for Jordan Soss, if you guys don't know, he's a lead singer of The Who rock band. And anyway.
That's kind of lost on me, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It's all
How
good.
Is it that like, we're not from the UK and we know this, Scott?
I don't know, man. But anyway, he... I've seen pictures of him, you know, from when he was first competing, and I think this may be the best he's ever looked.
at 55.
God damn, that's amazing, yeah. Man. That's cool.
Yeah. He finally didn't diet over diet, which he would have it because he's so used to pushing so hard, you know, through so many things, you know, that he would just like there was kind of no limit to what his mind was much stronger than his body in a certain sense. So anyway, I just wanted to like put some kudos out there for he's probably crying when he listens to this. I'm sure he'll, you know, just kind of losing it.
That's so cool. So hey, Scott, listen. Yeah. Every time I've ever competed, the first thing I do afterwards is start thinking what I want to do different next time. What have you tried to do different this time, and how is that working out for you?
Actually, Jordan and I talked about this. I think we just texted about this, and I got asked. I had dinner post-workout sushi with Joe Corbett, who owns House of Pain Apparel.
Oh, nice.
He lives down here in Florida part of the year. He's a snowbird. Eventually, he'll move down here. And he asked me the same question. And last year, I think I mentioned this on the show, I gave sort of a higher carb, lower fat approach a go. And I'll just sort of summarize. And I did that. It worked great. You know, I think I came in pretty good condition. And but I, you know, was thinking, you know, with all the carbs and the lack of fats, I sort of reverse dieted with that. And I started to have lots of kind of aches and pains. Just the late onset muscle soreness was greater. And I had gone from eating, you know, a lot of fats, a lot of omega-3s, a lot of sort of anti-inflammatory things in my diet to this higher carb thing. So I'm like, okay, I got to switch back to lower carbs on my non-training days. And I did that. And then I stuck with that this time through. But the one thing I tried to do, and I pushed, like I try to do with a lot of things, I kind of go past the limit to see where the line is, you know. But I dieted down on really, really high protein this time. And there's a notion, and it's sort of somewhat controversial in the scientific literature. And here's the basic gist of it is that for the most part, the extent to which protein synthesis is turned on by a protein feeding is larger, substantially larger than the extent to which protein breakdown is blunted. So what you sort of see there and what people sort of measured for that reason, just sort of quantitatively speaking, as well as difficulties in measuring protein breakdown. It's not as technically feasible as measuring protein synthesis. The focus has always been on muscle protein synthesis. You know, what does inter-workout protein do, or what does, you know, whatever particular variable supplement they might test or what have you, how does this impact muscle protein synthesis? And acute studies would then suggest if you've got some particular strategy like, you know, 10 grams of whey protein versus 20 grams or whey protein versus soy or what have you, that whatever turns on protein synthesis for the most part would then create the largest increases in muscle size over the long haul. But that doesn't pan out that way. Stu Phillips' lab did this, and then Atherton is the kind of the big name, is a collaborative effort, has at least an abstract out that will be out as a paper eventually. And they demonstrated in one of the studies that if you've measured protein synthesis at the beginning of a training period, you picked out the people with the most robust protein synthetic response post-workout, you'd expect those people to grow the most. And it didn't. The correlation was nothing. Like it was like 0.01. It was like had nothing. There's literally no real reason whatsoever to think there's any relationship between that acute protein synthetic response and what happens in terms of muscle growth, which is just bizarre. Like how can this possibly be, since protein synthesis is supposed to be the big deal? And then Atherton said, well, maybe, you know, it's the protein synthetic response changes over time. That first, you know, beginning week isn't really representative of what's going on week by week. So they measured, I think, before, at the beginning of the training period and at the end, and hoped to find something there, and nothing again, zero. No association, no Pearson product moment correlation coefficient that was statistically significant, zilch. So the other notion that's out there is that there's an underestimation of the extent to which protein breakdown is playing a role here. There's some research that suggests, at least when you measure whole body protein synthesis, that there doesn't really seem, they haven't sort of reached a plateau in terms of the extent to which graded increases in protein intake will inhibit protein breakdown. So you can just, you can take in 20 grams, 40 grams, and if they've gone as high as 70 grams or what would be like about 90 grams for a 220-pound bodybuilder, something like that, and you still see graded reductions in protein synthesis or in protein breakdown. So that's going to favor protein accumulation. That's what some people might call an anabolic effect. It's an anti-catabolic effect, at least in terms of whole body protein synthesis. So, you know, maybe it's going on in other areas other than the skeletal muscle. But it's still kind of a like, okay, what the hell's going on here? There's a sort of a big black box that still, you know, hasn't been completely unearthed. And so I sort of like, oh, well, let's give that a shot. Let's see what happens. You know, and, you know, my kidneys are healthy and you know, I'm going to try to give it a go and see what happens if I really do some pretty heavy protein intake. So I've been doing, for a lot of the prep, over 500 grams a day.
Wow.
Of protein. Yeah. And it's, and I could tell what's kind of happened at the end is my body is just scavenging everything, you know, for energy. And it would, I'm sure I have upregulated, you know, the enzymes of ureagenesis and protein breakdown in doing this. It would make perfect sense, of course. And so I've eaten some of these, you know, a lot of more protein shakes and I could just like sense the ammonia and the urea building up. It's not always, you know, if you dieted down, I know people have probably done this. I've done it so many times and you take in like a protein shake before or around your workout and you can, your sweat just smells horrible and you can smell the ammonia.
Oh yeah.
I didn't have so much of that, but that feeling, I was having that feeling sometimes too. So anyway, what I think happened, I think it's not been like, you know, 15 pounds of muscle or anything like that, but I think I've held on to muscle really, really well doing this. So I think it's been helpful. And of course, this is in the context of everything else, you know, that I'm doing with, you know, adjusting carbs on non-training days to basically nothing. And, you know, my carbohydrate intake on training days has gone down a little bit as well, but I've tried to offset that with higher protein. So I basically went from a very high carb approach last year with more moderate, you know, high, what we might call high protein, you know, for your average person, to a high protein, lower carb approach.
Interesting.
And so, you know, sort of went from one end of the spectrum to another end of the spectrum.
So this show's in Jersey, right? Are you flying to this? And if so, when do you take off?
I leave Thursday. I wanted to drive up there with the dogs, but there's no vacation rentals, and there aren't any there hardly aren't even any RV parks. No one wants to vacation in Jersey, I guess, unless you go to like Atlantic City or something like that.
Yeah,
you know, and this is, I'm flying into Newark, so you know it's not anywhere near that. So yeah, there's no place to go. I would have driven up. I would have been on the road probably right now, but there's no place to stay with the dogs.
So are you still training now or is training done? What's going on with that?
Yeah, I'll do a couple more workouts tomorrow and Wednesday and start. I've had to eat up the last week or so because my weight just wanted to keep dropping. And it was just losing too much muscle relative to body fat. So I've had to eat up just to keep my weight up.
Interesting.
So, yeah, I mean, basically it just means putting carbs in on non-training days.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and it's pretty interesting. You know, when Jordan's seen this, Sauce has seen this, I'm sure you've seen it, like anyone who's coached someone, is that the leaner you get, the quicker the water drops off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, like last night I was pretty happy. I'm like, oh, okay. I was up like 221 when I went to bed. I'm like, this is good. I think I did a nice job with the all-you-can-eat sushi thing, and I'm having, you know, this bagel French toast thing that I've told Jordan about, which is really good. And so I had my post-workout carbs, and I'm like, okay, good. I got myself up there, and then boom, I'm back down to 215 again this morning.
Wow.
Like, oh, wow. And I was adding sodium, and I was like, I wasn't holding back at all. Just the water just falls right off. So
you were probably peeing all through the night, I'm guessing, too.
I didn't notice it was that much. Okay. You know, any more than normal. I'm just like, just kind of comes off. So, but I probably, I'm just peeing all the time. It's just my normal rate of urination just because I'm leaner now. So
yeah, you notice anyway. That I'm at that point now where I find I drink water and I have to go like 10 minutes. Just that's when you know you're dieting, when you just can't hold it anymore. It's like nonstop.
Yeah. And a lot of times it's the protein. I think it's that protein effect too. You know, the urea is a diuretic. I use that with people. Though, you know, when you switch to a higher protein, lower carb day to drop water, you know, you're peeing out all that urea. So, you know, if you've increased your protein at all and dropped your carbs, that definitely will happen. So.
Well, I'm excited for you, man. I'm excited for you. This is going to be great. And thank you too for coming on. I mean, you're right up there. This is about to happen. So I'm really grateful that you could still make it on the show. And I'm certain everybody else is. You know, we had been away for several weeks. Guys, we got so much outpouring of messages and posts on Facebook and social media and stuff. Guys, I just want to tell you, everybody was very happy to hear the Muscle Minds back together.
Good. Yeah, me the most.
So listen,
I have to say before you start, the only bad thing about having you on is that you won't have an episode to listen to because you all already listened to it. And it's you. It's cool. You know,
I'll still listen to it, but I'll mute my voice because I don't.
I don't like to hear my own voice on the radio either. So I hear you.
So let's get into this. You know, one of the big questions that I've gotten through Facebook and through the boards and in private messages as well, and something that I've been interested in. You know, we were all familiar with you working with Chris Aceto, and you decided to make this change to work with Jordan. Can you tell us what your reasoning was behind this and what you guys plan to achieve together?
Well, I guess it started midway through the New York prep. I think I was around between 8 to 10 weeks out, and I'd gone over to Strength Asylum to have a session with my previous sponsor. And obviously Jordan trains there, and every time we see each other, we say hi. I've run into each other a few times over the last couple of years. And but this time I saw him in the gym, and he just looked monstrous. I don't know. He was pumped. I've never seen him in the gym, and I was just blown back straight away. And leading into this time period, I had had some issues with my shoulder from way before the Chicago Pro Prep. So late 2015, I had a shoulder injury, and that kind of forced me to negate shoulder day. So in the past, I've always been like a bro split kind of guy, you know, back on Monday, chest on Tuesday, rest on Wednesday, and so on.
Yeah.
And everything was trained once a week. But this shoulder injury forced me to not be able to do a sole shoulder day. So I thought, instead of doing, and at the time my chest was a weakness, my delts and arms kind of swallowed up my chest on most of my shots. So even though I'm a big bench presser, but obviously I'm shoulder dominant. So I thought, how about I do two chest days, both of them focusing on chest, but one of them heavy, one of them more pump. And on both days, I'll just do pump stuff for my delts. And that I saw a big improvement. I did that 8 months leading into Chicago Pro. So I didn't have one shoulder day. And the most improved body part on that stage was my shoulders and my chest. So that led me to think, okay, one, doing chest twice a week really helped me, like a tremendous amount. And two, do I really need a shoulder day? And then that kind of, when I started seeing Jordan every now and then and I bumped into him at strength, by that time I tried to incorporate that kind of technique into my programming because I've got really bad inflamed knees, lower back issues. So I've got a few limitations, I guess. And I've been trying to increase frequency on certain body parts, especially my upper body, because my legs have always been quite a strong point.
Absolutely.
And when I saw Jordan that day, like eight, nine weeks out from the New York, I said, you know, if I send you what I'm doing now, or talk, you know, would you be able to give me some pointers as to how I can, I don't know, whether it's rep ranges, exercise rotation. That's one thing I wasn't very good at, because I just did everything in one day. Like for back, I would do the deadlifts, barbell rows, T-bar rows, dumbbell, everything you could do for back, I would do in one day.
Yeah.
That's the mistake I made over the years that led me to having a lot of injuries. And straight away, Jordan's little face just lit up. His passion, like, I've not seen that for a while. When you speak to someone and they're just willing to, no matter what, just hear you out and help you, that really motivated me. And we hadn't even started talking yet. So I emailed Jordan pretty much that night or the night after. And he said, okay, send me everything you've how you train, how you have trained, and all your injuries. And et cetera. So I sent him everything. He said, okay, the night before you go into the gym, I'll send you that session and let's see how you get on it. And I think we got to a 2-week rotation where it was completely tailored to me. So I still had one leg day, but we added some hamstring and quad work on different days, occlusion training for quad work on like a back day. And my chest and shoulder day stayed twice. My bicep work was once because of a bicep tendon. So he completely tailored a program to me, and I just started improving. My injuries started going down, and that prep for me was probably my worst prep. We started late. I started really soft at 12 weeks out, and I ended up having to really, really suffer from like 6 or 7 weeks. I mean, Jordan saw me in the gym because I started training in strength pretty much every day. But that training really kept me going. And in the past, I've never been a logbook guy, and I'm not afraid to say that. You know, I was not against it, but it never caught my attention. I didn't see the appeal. I was more like, okay, well, Lee Priest goes in and just goes by feel, so why can't I? So it never made sense. But when I started speaking with Jordan regularly, I thought I need to log my lifts. And in the past, just before I did meet Jordan, I did start logging my lifts in my phone, just to see where I was at, if I was improving on anything. And obviously the Dorian mentality is always knocking around in Britain, in the UK. So that was in the back of my mind. But that's when I started really, I got a logbook, took it into the gym. And to be honest, I had some of my best sessions them last 6 weeks of the New York prep, regardless of the fact that I was eating next to nothing. I was doing 2 cardio sessions a day. I was almost on death's door pretty much the last 5 weeks. That opened my eyes. I thought, okay, if he can do this with me without really even knowing me, and with me in the worst state possible, imagine what we could do, you know, from fresh after a show when we start adding food in. And
yeah,
you know, that kind of got me excited. And then the more we spoke, we started training together, and I kind of just decided, look, I need someone here, because he could see what I was going through. He could see my performance in the gym. He could see how I looked. And to me, that holds a lot more value than sending pictures over across to Chris. Nothing against Chris at all. We've had this conversation. But I even said to Chris, like, as soon as we saw each other in New York, everything flipped on its head. Like, he changed everything. Like, within a split second when he saw me, he changed my carbs, he changed my fluid. Like, just because he could see me in person. And that's when I decided, right, that's what I need back home. I need someone to see me day in, day out, to really make the right decisions. Otherwise, I'm going to do this on my own, kind of thing. That's what kind of led me to decide to stay with Jordan. And as soon as the shows were over, we kept in touch the entire 2 weeks I was away. He saw how I peaked. You know, he saw how my body reacted to different kinds of sodium and water intake and carb intake. And I think he was getting a little bit excited as well because of the detail that I could show on physique. And the one thing that has been holding me back, I think, on a pro stage is my size, because I don't have any lagging body parts. I know my strengths. I've got the flow, the lines, the shape, the small waist. And the one thing is my size. And that's the one thing I've always kind of struggled to. I've been training since I was 12. So, you know, 18 years of training. I've slowly added the size, but I've never really capitalized on it because I've gone about it the wrong way. Even though I've done progressive overload, I've not done it the right way. So who's better to help you than Jordan Peters, because he's the biggest, strongest bodybuilder that I've ever met. And I was pumping up backstage with Akeem Williams in Cali Pro, and nothing against Akeem, but Jordan's like density and muscle per square inch on his frame is just something I've never seen before. Me teaming up with Jordan on that, in that sense, is just, it was a no-brainer to me. And I said to Chris, I said, I need someone here. I need someone strict. I don't want to get soft in my off-season. I just want to do this for me while I'm still young in bodybuilding terms, because I don't want to keep doing the same thing year in, year out, and have regrets down the line.
Yeah.
So that's how it all started. And then as soon as I got back from Cali, me and Jordan didn't waste any time on jumping on the rebound just to control it. And here we are 4 weeks post-show, and my weight's still steady, and my food is going up, and we're having some crazy sessions because he's getting ready for a show. He's seen me in condition. He's seen Corinne in condition. So I think I'm adding a little bit of positivity in that respect, where he's got a target to aim for condition-wise. So I think we've got a really good energy right now, and I'm quite excited about what's to come.
That's so cool. Hey, listen, I want to get Jordan's perspective on this, but before we move forward into what's happening now, just out of my own personal curiosity, you know, I'm a real big fan of Chris Aceto, and I listen to a lot of the things that he says, and you know, I have a lot of respect for him too. I haven't got a chance to talk to him yet, but I want to just ask you, you know, what did you learn from him? What were some of the things that you came away having worked with Chris that changed your perspective? Because I'm sure that, you know, you obviously took something from that, and we take something from everybody we work with. And what are you going to move forward with that you had picked up from him?
One thing I learned off Chris was basics. He really preached basics. He preached, like, you know, I think even Jordan says this, like, a lot of the pros, because I used to ask Chris a lot about Jay, because he's one of my favorite bodybuilders, and I used to quiz Chris about, you know, how did Jay train in the 90s, and what do you think his best look was, and what do you think happened, you know, when he was chasing Ronnie, because I think his look changed. And Chris's answer always was, Jay trained low to moderate volume, heavy, intense, slow controlled reps, always to failure, and he stayed lean. Like, those are the things that Chris always said. He said he stuck to the basics, he stayed lean, he stayed disciplined, and these are the same things that Jordan will kind of preach, obviously in a different way of training, like with regards to rotation and rep ranges. But Jay did the same thing, you know, he trained heavy as he could, he went to failure, his intensity was high, and I think that somewhat changed after 2002, and that wasn't Chris's doing. I think Chris said he stopped doing what worked, and I think a lot of pros do, and a lot of pros preach that they do the pump stuff and they don't really care about the weights, but they all did the same at the beginning. So that always stuck with me when I used to ask him about volume, training volume, because I used to do quite a lot. He said, you know, he thinks that less volume means you can train heavier, and training heavier means you can build more muscle. And he said, training heavier with basic exercises, you build a physique that, you know, it's like, you compare it to someone who does a lot of pump training. Pump training gives you a look that's like your muscles full of air.
Yeah.
Whereas if you train heavy basics, you know, to failure, lower volume, it's like you create a look to the muscle, looks like it's filled with stone. That always stuck in my head. Also, you get a lot of less is more from Chris. So, like, a lot of the answers to sometimes when we got stuck in the off season or prep, it'd be like, well, how much volume are you doing? You know, if the food is the where it should be, and you're resting enough. His question would be, how much volume are you doing? Oh, well, I'm doing like 20 to 25 sets per body part. okay, let's do 14 sets this week.
Okay.
So he wouldn't change anything but that. So he doesn't want to increase the food. He wants to lower the volume, and usually that would work because I'd go in and I'd be leaving the gym sooner, but I'd be recovering quicker. I'd be able to train heavier. That's another thing I learned off Chris. And I guess there's quite a lot. I mean, indirectly, because Chris doesn't like sit there and teach you, because he's very few words when he answers back. Like if he could get away with writing the letter K, he would. So it's very hard to get information out of him. I don't know if it's, you know, he's got a lot of properties to look after. He homeschools his kids, so I don't know. He's got a lot on his plate, but. From working with him, he had the same kind of methods. He kind of let your body, he tried to read your body and see where it wanted to go, and he'd kind of work with it instead of having a set plan. You'd wake up, you send him pictures, and whatever we did the day before, if that worked, he'd do it again. It was so basic, and especially with the supplements, it was very simple, not a lot of changes. He focused a lot on trying to keep you healthy. He's very instinctive. It's like Dave Palumbo always says, he's like that Italian grandma that makes the best ever pizza sauce. But he has, you ask him what did you do, like what did you use for them 6 weeks, he has no clue. Like he said when I met him in the UK, like he randomly turned around to me and said, what did we do for the last 6 weeks of your British 2015 prep? And I was like, well, we didn't really change a lot. Why? Because like Jose's asking me, and I just don't know what we did. He's very unconventional, and it's just like he sits there and he studies your body, and he just makes random decisions. And I'm sure he can back it up with science, but I think he's come that far along now for the last 30 years that it's all off instinct. It's all off his eye. And I even spoke to Jordan regarding Stefan. And how Stefan brought Corinne in, and sometimes they make some decisions that you think, wow, that's ballsy. Like I would never have anyone do that. And this is what these guys do that I think separates them from people who have set protocols and that kind of, that was the coolest thing about Chris. And he'd randomly text me like, see how I am. And I mean, this last prep, I feel like it was slightly different. I think we timed certain things wrong. And that's why I kind of started leaning towards thinking, okay, maybe I want to try something else. So,
okay.
But I could go on and on about Chris, because I think I did four preps with him, but every prep was different. And he just, there's no method with Chris. That's the main thing.
That's interesting. Yeah. I've heard the same types of stuff from so many other people too. Yeah. So, hey, Jordan, let's get your perspective on all of this, man. Now, take me back to meeting Sasan and when you guys started formulating this partnership.
So, like I said, I bumped into him in the gym, and one of our mutual friends, who's Sas's previous sponsor, Joe, Sas would probably like some advice. And then Sas spoke to me. And yeah, we got straight to work in regards to training. It's pretty easy to put together a split for someone like Sas. He has no weaknesses, so it's mostly just about working around injuries and just making sure that everything kind of holds up in those last periods of prep. And we did that quite sufficiently, and was happy with that. And then now. The volume that we're working at is a volume that we can both recover from. I think we've both agreed with the intensity that we're training at that there is no scope to add any volume to any of our sessions. There's been a couple of back sessions where we've had, I think, 9 sets down that day, and we got through 8 doing 4 exercises, 2 sets each. And by the time we wrapped that up, we were both like, yeah, the 9th is just going to be a total fucking waste of time.
Yeah.
Wow. So let's sack that one off. It would have just brought nothing. Once you get to that point in the session where you can feel that's just going to just hinder recovery. Like, there's nothing more to add beyond what we just did.
Yeah.
Because I think the session we'd done like a couple of sets of deadlifts, a couple of sets of chins, a couple of sets of machine rows and a couple of sets of a pull-down variation, all out to failure for every single one, like progressing lifts. And then once that's kind of wrapped up, it's like, well, there's no real point doing anything else. So I'm happy with everything in regards to where we're at. He's still incredibly lean. He is 8 to 9 pounds over his baseline weight. We're just going slow. So one thing that Sass highlighted is that he can get fat quite quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're just being very, very patient. That's all. Because at the moment, he's getting stronger off of the calories. So all the while he's getting stronger and his performance is where it needs to be, you don't need to eat for the sake of it. And I said to Sass, there are going to be periods in this phase where you're going to be hungry and you're going to have off days of training where you're going to feel tired and like you need more energy. But ignore all that and let's just focus solely on your performance in the gym. And his performance in the gym is just getting better and better. So all the while that's improving at the rate it is, we will keep feeding him to keep that going. So if we still have body weight to play with in that sense, and we can keep getting him stronger and stronger and stronger, and we've still got body weight to play with all off season, we'll get him 20 to 30 pounds over baseline weight and he'll still be tidy looking. And that's the goal, because I think we can get 12 pounds more tissue on him for next year.
Wow.
I'm absolutely certain of that with the way he's responding at the moment, because Sass isn't strong yet. Like, he's definitely not weak, but his ability to lift and control weights is exceptional. So his connection with lifts is phenomenal. One of those people that I've watched train that has like the best connection with lifting weights that I've seen. Kind of similar to like when you watch Ben Pekulski train legs, you like, shit, the way he connects with the weights is unbelievable, which is why he looks the way he does. And this is obviously why Sass looks the way he does. But once we get him really fucking strong, lifting with no change at all to his technique, then you're going to see something else next year, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
This is interesting. So, you know, I was watching one of the videos you guys have at the trainedbyjp.com website, and it kind of echoes what you're saying here, that you know, a lot of times guys think that, okay, we're hitting the off season, we are just going to start hammering the calories. And Jordan, at times your calories have gotten really high. I think it's easy for us to attach to growing, equaling that you need to eat and eat and eat. But you were talking about that. You guys aren't doing any kind of force feeding. This strikes me as interesting that he's even hungry sometimes.
Well, all the time.
at the moment, all the time. I mean, I think in that first 4 to 6 weeks post show, and this is something that Scott told me, that like all the while you're kind of hungry like that, but if you're able to train well, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like when that pressure is high, like I swear this was about 5 years ago, Scott told me this, but like post show, you imagine like your hunger is, and your ability to use that food is like the pressure on like a hose. And like you turn up the pressure really, really high, and then it's just kind of coming out all full force. And then you drop the pressure down and it ends up just kind of dripping out. And we want to be in that place where everything's super efficient and the pressure is really high and your body's able to use all that food. And if you can drag that period out for a long time and you can keep utilizing food that efficiently, the stress on your body is lower, because it's only when you start to overwhelm it with food and overwhelm it with drugs that you're then... your body will start to drag its feet in regards to progress. Mm-hmm. And if you can, obviously it's inevitable that you might hit that phase, but that's at the end of an off season. We're months away from that. So if we're going to get him to that point, we've got to be really meticulous in this phase here to ensure that we can get there. But like I've done this phase a few times myself, and I've put other three people through this phase, and I know how it pans out every time. It's quite predictable, really. But the only hard part is the execution, because there's days on your rest days where your calories are quite low, you don't have any carbohydrates, and you feel tired, and the urge to kind of just eat shit is high.
Yeah.
And that's where you need to just stay on the path.
Well, this kind of leads me to a really good question that one of the listeners had written in, and this is over at the Advices Radio message boards. This is from a guy who calls himself Gunrunner. And he asks Sasan, in general, what are your calories and macros for the off season, And what are you doing nutritionally right now as you transition from contest prep?
Okay, so all right. Before I go into the detail, just wanted to say that this period that Jordan is taking me through and has just been talking about is completely new territory to me.
Ah.
Like all the years I've been bodybuilding, being an IFBB pro, like this is so new to me, and it's a huge eye opener because, like I said to Jordan, like by now usually I'd have a bloated face. I might look big certain times of the day, but maybe in the gym, but the rest of the day I look soft. And I said to him, Jordan, I every mirror I walk past in the house, I hit a pose because of I love how I'm looking like that. Like I'm literally not too far off stage condition, but like 10 pounds fuller and just bursting full all the time. It's like Leanne, my girlfriend, she's like shocked because she's seen me go through this in the past, like the rebound period. And I'm always huffing and puffing and moaning that I can't, you know, I don't want to eat and I feel bloated and this and that. And the time period that Jordan has set, which is usually, I think he said anything from 8 to 12 months that we're going to hit the maximum body weight, I would have hit it in like 4 weeks, 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And I would have felt like crap. And I see a lot of bodybuilders doing the same thing, even if they do it with clean food. Like they don't have to do it with junk food. Like I've seen a lot of people go, okay, I need 600 carbs and 500 grams of protein a day now to grow back out of this show. And even that, just too many calories, your body's going to it's going to go back to that kind of feeling like crap and sluggish. And so I just wanted to say that this Jordan, what Jordan's teaching me here is just like priceless. And I advise anyone to just take this on board and just try it post show. And obviously Scott is the one who kind of started all this. So thank you to Scott, but this is getting me excited. And I've never been hungry. I've never been this full and I've never been this like improving in the gym this much altogether. All them variables never usually match for me in the off season. Mm-hmm. Something's always off. So, but yeah, with regards to calories, straight away, when I sat down with Jordan after my, I think it was about a week after the Cali Pro, I had some time off the gym. I had a photo shoot and, basically my rest day is zero carbs, with 60 grams of protein and 15 grams of fat per meal for 6 meals a day. So it's not a lot of calories at all. Like he said, like them days, I do get quite hungry. When I take my dog out, I do feel quite lethargic and kind of like the feeling you get in the last couple of weeks of prep. So it was a bit of a shock thinking, oh, well, I'm 2 weeks, 3 weeks post show. Should I be feeling like this? But
yeah.
But then on the day after, my breakfast stays the same, 60 protein, 15 carbs, 15 fats. And my pre-workout, we add some fats and slow-releasing carbs. So it's like 60 protein, 40 carbs, and 6 grams of fat just to offset the carb release. And that on its own kind of just wakes me up because I've had a day of just protein and fats. I think Jordan said it keeps your insulin sensitivity nice and healthy so that when we do put the carbs in, your body really responds well. So I have that, and then I'll have my intra-workout shake, which is 60 grams of protein and 85 carbs now. So that improves my performance as I'm going through the session. It just keeps my endurance and strength there. Hmm. Intra-workout, something I've never done before as well. So that's something new that I've done with Jordan. And then post-workout is a really big meal. I think we've gone up to like 240 carbs now. 100 grams of protein, so a bigger hit of protein, fats minimum. And then the post meal is 50 carbs and 60 protein. And then we go back to a protein and fat meal. And then in the middle of the night, I'll have a 60 gram whey shake when I wake up and go to the toilet or something. So like training days are full of calories. Even though the calories isn't actually super high just yet, the carb hit that I get at the right time around training, it really, like, by the time I get to my post meal, I'm full, I'm vascular, and I just feel like a completely different bodybuilder compared to what I do at the end of my rest day. And at first, it was a bit of a shock. It's like a push-pull thing. You know, you're pushing so hard on the workout days, and then on the rest day, it's like you're on a bit of a come down. But now that we're going, we're progressing through the weeks, and I'm getting stronger in the gym, and I'm looking better and better. For the first time, I said to Leanne yesterday, like, I feel like a true professional off-season bodybuilder right now. Like, I don't mind taking my top off. If someone asks me for a guest pose, I don't mind, you know, guest posing. I feel like I'm in really good shape. I'm not in a low mood anymore. You know, I'm starting to come out of that nice and slowly. My carbs are going up. And I just generally, I'm starting to feel great, and I'm excited because, you know, this is only the beginning. Jordan says this is still going to be a few hard weeks, and I don't find it hard just yet. My strength's going up, and like Jordan said, the focus is on the performance. And I do generally think a lot of bodybuilders overeat, and the performance does end up suffering because your body has so much inflammation, and it's just backed up with, like, I guess, paperwork to do with regards to digestion and stuff. So I just feel efficient. I feel fresh. I'm eating a load of vegetables. I'm drinking a lot of fluid, stuff that I don't do in the off season, which in turn makes you less efficient. It could ruin your digestion. Almost every prep I've done in the last 3 years, my first 2 weeks have been spent with some kind of stomach bug. Like, as soon as I switch to prep, I get stomach bug, and all my meals just go through me for about a week or two. Like, every prep, and that's because I've force fed too much in the off season. So this is just a really cool way of doing things. And now that I'm helping clients, I'll do the same with clients. I'll give the same advice to anyone else. And it's crazy that it's took me so long to meet Jordan and figure it out.
That's so cool. So, you know, I have to ask this question on behalf of all the listeners. Post-workout, is there any sorbet involved?
Well, it's funny because every time I go food shopping, I go down like the ice cream, frozen the frozen kind of yogurt aisle, and all the ice cream, and I'm thinking, oh, should I get some sorbet or should I get some cereal? But I remember Jordan saying at the beginning, if you're hungry, you know, just eat foods that's going to fill you up. So I'm actually still only on oats and bagels for the 220. So I've actually added some cereal from tomorrow for my extra 40 grams that Jordan's added in. But I think when we get to the point where I'm finding it hard to eat, I think that's when I'll start swapping certain amounts of carbs for stuff like cereal. And I've never done sorbet, so I'm actually looking forward to that. I'm going to try it.
Nice. Well, you can get a lot of good information about all your best flavors of sorbet from Scott here.
It's the trump card. So you don't need that yet. That's when it's like adding turbo. You're flying along now. You had great, you know, economy on the road. You're kicking, you know, breaking PRs. You don't need the sorbet. Sorbet is when you're adding gas at the end of the off season race.
Of course, yeah. I'll leave the sugary stuff for when I'm finding it hard to eat.
Yeah.
So Jordan, you've worked with a lot of people. You know, obviously, Sasan is not your average client. Tell me about what you've seen just in this last few weeks. I imagine you have to be pretty impressed.
Yeah, but like when it comes to the kind of the detail and like that side, that doesn't shock me as much because I've seen it on Corin. So, like, they both have, like, really similar kind of detailed physiques. But what's really cool is it's just combined with just that mass. Mm. So when you have detail and that much mass, it's just it's fucking insane. But then I want to say I'm not surprised because how this period's gone. Because this is what I expect, just in regards to like professionalism and attitude towards this. I mean, we're both very aware what the goal is next year, which is to be top six at Olympia. And to make that happen, we have to be very focused from here. And I think a lot of pros, from my understanding, just aren't going to be as hungry as that year round. Some will, for sure.
I think for all of us, man, it's easy to lose that focus.
Yeah, it is hard. It's hard. But then I think what helps in that sense is just how you surround yourself in regards to company as well. Mm-hmm. And this is why the energy is good over here, because we're all very hungry to make progress. And when there's a handful of you that are all kind of pushing in that way, and that there's no margin for complacency or laziness, or we're not going to drop the ball in any way over here. Yeah. So like, we won't miss a trick this off season. So that I expect, because if you want to be one of the best in the world, you need to act like it. And there are some guys out there that are blessed that don't need to act like it. And if they're complacent enough, then Sass is going to beat them.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. So this is what Dorian said. Dorian said that a lot of the guys in his era should have beaten him, but they just could not be as meticulous as he was.
Mm.
And for as long as he was able to do it. And there's no reason not to be able to recreate that mindset here in this situation. So it's exciting.
Yeah, that's one thing that I'd like to add is that I've had hard training sessions in the past. Someone asked me, I think a few days ago, said, you know, what's the difference? What's the biggest difference with you training with Jordan as opposed to what you've been doing in the past? Like, you know, have you had training sessions this hard? And like, I will say that I've had hard training sessions in the past, because for me, I've been genetically gifted with, muscle insertions, muscle bellies, structure, lines, flow, and the ability to get that detail. But I've really not been blessed with the ability to build strength and size like some of the other pros that I'm going to be going up against. So it's been really hard. It's been like an uphill struggle for me in the past to train, to get stronger. But one thing that's been missing that now that's coming so, not easily, but it's just coming smoothly with Jordan, is the day in, day out intensity. Like the entire session, we don't back off the pedal. Mm. Like this is the closest. This is me really understanding what Dorian did for them 6 years, like his intensity and his discipline and his tunnel vision. I think this is the closest I've ever been. Like Jordan is the closest person I've seen to having that kind of discipline in like 24/7. I've never seen, like, I've trained with some hard trainers in the past, some psychos in the gym, but none of them have that consistency like year round. And that's why I know for a fact that I can get to the top five, top six Olympia, because I know 100% that no pro is going to be doing that kind of consistency. They weren't doing it in the 90s, other than Dorian. So there's no chance in hell that some of them will be doing it now. And if they do miss a day or two, that's when I'm going to, like Jordan said, that's when I can slide in. Because I'm not saying that I'm the hardest trainer on the planet, because there's always going to be someone bigger, stronger, and someone always going to be training harder than you. I think that's silly when people post stuff on Instagram that no one's training harder than me and blah, blah, blah. I think that's stupid. But like, this is just ridiculous focus and intensity day in, day out. And like, we don't say much when we're going into a session because we're all so like anxious and sometimes nervous about the lifts that we're going to be hitting and the intensity and the places that we're going to have to take ourselves mentally and physically. That's one thing that I've lacked in the past, 10 to 12 years that Jordan really brings. And I think because we have similar obsessions, like I'm obsessed with getting bigger and stronger, getting to the Olympia, and Jordan's obsession for getting as good as he can get, it locks together and it just creates an energy that I honestly don't think there's much of that going on around. I even said on RX Muscle the other day, I said, you know, watch out, this is going to be the next Oxygen Gym with more hardcore training.
Nice. I have one more question over here, and I don't know if Scott has anything he wants to ask. This is a this will be my last question before we go to break, though, unless, of course, Scott has something. This is from IFBB Pro Shelby Starnes, and he asks, what has bodybuilding taught you over the years, and how has it changed you as a person?
It's made me selfish.
Honest.
No, I think bodybuilding has taught me simplicity. So I think as a bodybuilder, like especially the higher you climb up the ladder, and ever since I got into, because I had quite a quick move up into the pro ranks, I could have easily let the pressure and the not attention, but I could have let all that kind of crush me mentally from day one. But one thing that really kept me in that bodybuilder mindset where I just want to train and eat and I just want to get better was to keep everything around me really simple, like a small group of friends that I trust, simplicity in my routine. So if I wake up and I know that I've got, you know, this meal to eat, I've got to go to the train at this to train at this time, I've got to make my pre-workout shake, and it's taught me structure and simplicity that I think leads on to anything you do, you know, whether you're a pro bodybuilder or someone who has a 9-to-5. I honestly think bodybuilding has taught me discipline. Like, it has taught me structure, it's taught me how to deal with tough mental times, like when you're in prep and you're in them hard, really dark places. I know Jordan's been there, and I know Scott's been there, and yourself as well. When you're in them places, you kind of just sit and wonder about other things that are going on around you and think, well, you know, I can get through this. Like, my body's, you know, it's got nothing in it. My mental capacity is just zero for anything. Like, if I can get through this, then I can get through a fight with my wife, and I can get through. You know, it gives you strength mentally, and I think that's one of the biggest things bodybuilding's given me. And it's also given me something to hold on to when some things do get hard in life, like you're going through maybe hard financial times, or a family member has passed away, or, you know, it sounds crazy, but I think having a bodybuilder's lifestyle, it kind of keeps you focused on something. And when you have something positive like bodybuilding to focus on, everything else kind of falls into place. You don't fall into a deep hole where you start drinking or where you start taking drugs kind of thing, because you've got this body that you want to look after. You have goals set. I guess that's kind of the only answer I can give. It's just made me a better person with regards to handling things, being humble, being down to earth. A lot of bodybuilders who train and do it for the passion and nothing else, they're all the same. They're all very genuine, very nice guys, like, you know, you three, a prime example. I mean, you've got the egotistical guys, but they're not doing it for the right reasons to me. So for me, that's been the biggest thing. It's just made me a really simple, strong-minded person who can kind of like set routines for the day and just get shit done.
I think all of us that are listening right now could relate to that.
Yeah, that's cool. It really is. It's like, I've been asked that question a lot, like especially by family members, like who didn't really understand it. And I said, well, why are you doing this? You know, why do you keep doing this? And it's like, you know what? Like, I love doing it, and it makes me happy. You know, it makes me relax. It makes me de-stress. It, you know, there's just so many benefits to it that if you don't get into it at the wrong end with the wrong reasons, it can honestly make you a better person and make you peaceful in your mind.
Scott, did you have anything you wanted to ask before we go to the break?
I've got so many thoughts running through my head, but I'll spare everybody. Sas, it seems like the genesis of a lot of what we've spoken about, you know, that's happened in the last year or so was going to Strength Asylum just being there. And I was thinking of, you know, you're such a friendly guy. I mean, you're just, about as nice a guy as you could meet. and I know it's the truth, you know, and anyone who knows you, I mean, you can, it comes right through on the radio here too. And it's tough to switch from, you know, sort of that just natural state of your personality into, I'm an animal and I'm going to dig in. Wow. And, you know, and then gravity is going to be my bitch today type of way to look at it. And it's cool that, you know, you could go to Strength of Style where everyone is. I mean, I just was there. I got to meet the, you know, Andrew, the owner, and, you know, I had a great time training there with you guys.
Yeah.
And it just seems like everyone's really cool. And it's sort of, anyway, I'll stop there. But how did you find the gym? How did you end up going over there and starting to train there?
Well, over the last couple of years, Strength Asylum, the name was starting to grow, and it's not too far from me. It's like 20 miles. I had a few friends who had gone over and trained there, and then obviously Eddie Hall, World's Strongest Man, he trains there, yeah. So everyone knew that gym for that reason. And then when Jordan moved up from down south to study up here, he started training there. And then also my previous sponsor, Joe, he had moved to Stoke to train at Strength as well. And so I thought, you know, I've got to go and train there. So when I went to train with Joe, it kind of just opened my eyes, because my mindset before training at Strength was, you know, I don't care where I train or who I train with. You know, this is me going into the gym, and it's me lifting the weights. I can train in a shed. I can train in a fitness gym. Like, my intensity comes from within. That was my mindset in the past. Like, all them years, like, I used to watch Phil train and Jay train on his own, and I thought, I don't need to go anywhere hardcore. Or that was honestly my mindset, and I wouldn't accept any other way of thinking. But when I went to Strength, and I'd been to hardcore gyms in the past, but I'd never enjoyed them. Like, the machines were all cramped up too close together, or it was too scruffy and dirty, and or too busy, or too many guys thinking that they're, you know, this and that. But when I went to Strength, it seemed to have the perfect balance of modern. It was clean. It had all the Hammer Strength equipment. It had heavy dumbbells. It was well maintained, and it had an attitude that was just, there was no egos. Everyone trained hard, and that's and the intensity was just clear from the moment I stepped through the door. And it hit me, and I thought, you know, I did one or two sessions there, and I was always already hitting lifts that I hadn't before, because for me, when I'm getting into a set, and, you know, you're hearing music and you hear people lifting around you, you've got your training partner watching you and edging you on, you kind of, your body takes on a different, you mentally take on a different role to get the reps out that you want to get. And I had that in Strength that I hadn't really felt on my own in my previous gyms. So that opened my eyes, and I thought, well, maybe I should be coming here more often. So initially it was just to go there once every, you know, once or twice a week because of the distance. But then when I started training with Jordan, and he said, you know, maybe let's just train together when you start your off season and I start my prep. And, you know, I just couldn't say no to that. And I thought, hang on a minute, this could be the best decision I could ever make career-wise, you know, my bodybuilding. And Jordan, to me, I could tell the kind of person he was really shined through for me. Like, I've not met someone like that for a long time. And Leanne, my girlfriend, could see it. And I thought, okay, I need this kind of person around me. You know, I need Jordan, Andrew, the owner. And I thought, okay, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. I actually left my work at the time. I left my sponsor. Wow. And I said to Jordan, I said, look, I don't want any distractions. I want to be in a bubble for the next 12 months, and I want to make the Olympia. Like, I'll do the bare minimum financially just to get me there. So I'm going to be taking a risk. I remember Eddie Hall doing the same thing, where he left his day job just so he could put more into training, eating and sleeping. And it kind of just did a flip, 180 flip from me just training at my gym if and when I could fit in around my work, to it being my entire focus. So I think it's a lot has changed simply because of strength, and I don't think there's another gym like it in the UK, and I think that's why Jordan's staying up here.
Yeah, I got that impression. You, and my other question, the other thing I was thinking about is the whole approach to slowly adding food back in. It's, you know, the peri-workout that we talked about. Why do you think, I have my guesses as to why people don't do that. It makes sense for various reasons, but why do you think you never thought of that, or that never ever occurred to you personally?
I knew of it, but I never looked into it, and I never tried it properly. So to me, in the past, you know, intra workout, oh well, I could drink a Lucozade, but I've done that in the past and it's not done anything for me. But I didn't really know the science that went into the, you know, the molecular weight of what the carb source that you've got, how good it digests, you know, where you're getting your aminos and the essential aminos from. And I didn't give it a good run. And it wasn't just the intra workout and peri, it was the entire day's setup. So I just thought it didn't make a difference when I ate my carbs. I had the mindset of, I guess, Chris Aceto, all the old school kind of guys who said, well, Arnie didn't need it, so you didn't need it. You know, that was always stuck in my head because I never had a mentor or a coach until Chris. Like, I had to do it all on my own. I didn't have any hardcore bodybuilders in the gyms that I trained at. The only things I had access to was Flex magazine. I wasn't very good on social media, so I didn't really know of the forums. I didn't know of Dante. I didn't really even know. I think John Meadows was the first person I knew that did kind of peri workout. So I wasn't out there. I was so basic. Like, even now, I have to give my girlfriend my laptop on my phone to do a lot of the stuff. Like, I'm still a bit of a caveman in that sense. I didn't let myself access a lot of information, so I just kind of took it like hearsay type thing, and I accepted the fact that, oh well, you eat your 6 meals a day and you spread your protein out, you spread your carbohydrates out, no carbs before bed, amino acids throughout your session. So I never gave it a chance. But when I was fiddling with some of my nutrient timing in the last few weeks of my New York prep, myself, I moved some carbs away from breakfast around training, because I was seeing what Jordan was doing, and I asked him the reason, and he said, look, performance in the gym is everything, you know, even your last few weeks of prep. So maybe move some of your carbs. Calories weren't going to change. But as soon as I switched some of my carbs over from breakfast to intra and post, or even pre and post, my training sessions got a lot better. And that had a knock-on effect on my progress and my fat loss and my overall look. So that itself opened my eyes, and I thought, okay, I feel good doing this. And when I started with Jordan, he said, are you okay with doing no carbs at breakfast and more around training? I said, 100%. And I absolutely love it now. I see the benefits. I've even got my girlfriend doing it, and she's even seen the benefits. And, you know, it's mainly performance to me. Like, you don't really get that huge dip. You can keep going. Recovery is really good. And I don't see any fat gain. And I'm on over 400, nearly 450 grams of carbs a day now on training day. And I'm still just as lean as I was 3 weeks ago. So that kind of says something about carb timing, the nutrient timing.
Nice. Yeah, it's an interesting perspective. To say, you know, Arnold didn't do that, you know, and the old school, or Ronnie Coleman didn't have to do that, or what have you. And at the same time, that's why I think what you're talking about with the mentality and the environment there at Strength Asylum is so cool, because you've got this mix of hardcore nose to the grindstone, you know, which Jordan epitomizes, and obviously Eddie Hall, and who also photobombs Jordan's videos when he gets a chance to. So, you know, that's like a crazy combination there. But being sort of hardcore and nose to the grindstone doesn't always match up with being innovative and being willing to step outside the box, which, you know, not so much now, but, you know, years ago, You know, Milos was the first person to really kind of do the intra-workout thing. And
yeah,
there are still folks, you know, who don't want to look at that. And this isn't, you know, I'm not pointing this at anyone in particular, but I'm just kind of complimenting what seems to be going on there with Strength Asylum, because it's like all the likes are attracting likes there, in that people want to go for it and train hard and basically just take, I'm going to take hard training, which works. I'm going to take the ability to, or the willingness to experiment, which works, and make mistakes, because you learn most from your mistakes most of the time, and combine those things. And that's sort of like what people would think of as being egotistical, you know, because you're like, this all about me. I'm going in here to train, like, you know, blah, 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 but not necessarily with being completely open to falling flat on your face if something doesn't work, because it's, you know, because everyone will say, well, yeah, we told you, no one's been doing that. Arnold didn't have to do it.
Yeah.
So it's a really unique combination of perspective. I think that
you're right. And I remember you saying a few podcasts ago that, I think there was a question saying, you know, are things getting overcomplicated these days? And, I'm into cars, and, if I've got a car and someone says, well, why don't you add, you know, this is pretty much what you said, but not exactly. Why don't you add a bigger air intake and, you know, increase the exhaust diameter to increase the airflow? And, you know, that's, you know, like saying like, oh, Arnold and Ronnie didn't have to do it. That's like me saying, well, a Ferrari doesn't have to change the
right
air intake and the, you know. But that doesn't relate to me. So if I can add bits and bobs to my my training and nutrition that's going to overall add, you know, 2% to my performance, why shouldn't I?
Yeah.
You know, I can't just look at someone who's already got the total package and say, well, he's not adding all these bits and bobs, so I don't need to. I just need to train hard or press the gas pedal harder. So that's why I think that I'm open to new ideas and trying stuff out.
I think that the trick in the future will be that we DNA sample those extreme athletes, and then we can just take their genes. Ah, this is why they've got this gene.
Exactly.
I'm going to steal that, you know, and retrovirally infect myself with it. Yeah. So thanks for answering those, man. I just thought you'd have some good. Sure. Of course, bud.
All right, guys, we're running way late on time here. Let's run to a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll only have time for a couple of questions. But Sass said that he's going to hang out with us and answer those. So hang in there, guys. We will be right back.
Muscle Minds is made possible in part by Jordan Peters. If you've enjoyed listening to Jordan today, check out his website, trainedbyjp.com. The site offers over 50 hours of video content covering everything, from the most basic approach to training and nutrition for beginners, all the way through advanced anabolic and insulin strategies for seasoned competitors. You can follow Jordan and Corin's blog as they prep for their next shows and have questions answered daily on their forum section. So check out trainedbyjp.com. If you've enjoyed Scott Stevenson's contribution to Muscle Minds, you can learn more about him, his products, and his services at his website, fortitudetraining.net. Those who purchase Scott's book or any of his coaching products receive a free subscription to his message board where he answers questions daily. So check out fortitudetraining.net.
Hey guys, Scott McNally here.
And this is Vijay Peary.
You guys know us from here at the Advices Radio Network. Well, we also have another show, Bodybuilding Nerds Radio. We've got everything from supplement reviews
to shout outs,
listener questions,
and of course, our weekly bodybuilding podcast reviews.
So check us out every Friday.
Or whenever you feel like cooking or doing your cardio or basically wasting time with us.
You can hear us at bodybuildingnerds.com.
Also on iTunes. Bodybuilding Nerds, it's time to get nerdy.
All right, guys, and we are back. First question, with training routines that utilize a high-frequency, low-volume per session approach, how much does training change during a diet when the volume has to come down to some degree to allow for sufficient recovery? We cannot reduce volume indefinitely, or we end up doing so little work that muscle loss is a true concern. What are your thoughts on that one, Jordan?
typically I like to train at kind of the maximum that I can recover from in an off-season period. And usually that crosses through fairly okay into a calorie deficit. And then we don't really want to pull our volume back too much as well, because you have to remember that that's a pretty useful tool for expending energy when you're doing really, really hard all-out sets. If you were to do 10 to 12 sets in a session that are really very hard, your epoch that you can create from that is somewhat substantial, especially if you're using big, large compound movements and every single one is balls to the wall. So obviously the guy has, or girl, has recognized that you don't want to be adding volume, which is certainly the case for most people. There is a small circumstance, whereas if you've been off of anabolics for your off-season period, and then when you go back on, you start to diet, that your recovery capabilities might then allow you to get more total work done because you're making use of the drugs. But I think typically if you work at the maximum you can recover from on off-season, and you carry that through into your prep, and then towards the end of the prep, you just dig in and just dig in as hard as you can. Those sets that are fucking hard, and you're kind of dying between them, and you think to yourself, holy shit, how am I going to do this next set? Like, that's a good place to be. That's where you want to be. Revel in the way that that feels, because I enjoy that when I'm there, especially if I'm fit. If I'm fit and I'm light and I can breathe and I can work through those sets, I fucking love that feeling. I like that feeling a million times more than when I'm like over 280 pounds, I'm full of food, and I just feel fat and fucked anyway because I can't breathe. That's way worse. So if you're like really tired because your glycogen is depleted and you're peeled, just laugh in that position and just think, fuck yeah, I'm coming for you. Watch what I can do when I have to dig in. Just employ that mindset and you'll be absolutely fine. You won't lose any muscle. You'll be good.
How about you, Scott? Do you have any input on this one?
I'm still just reveling in what Jordan said. It's so true. I've actually thrown up after my last three workouts. And this is not with much intra-workout because I've just been training so hard. Wow. And what I've done, yeah, and I rarely do I throw up. I'm just pushing so hard. And a couple things you can do. One, you can reduce the volume. I mean, like with volume tier one on fortitude training, that's pretty low. Sometimes people could switch to a little less frequently if their volume is already really low, or take a day off now and again. You know, instead of going 4 days a week, go every other day. Those are approaches that can happen. The thing that I'll tell people too, and this is kind of what Jordan was getting at, and what I do is I just, you know, I do a set and then I just rest as long as I need to where I'm fired up to kick ass again. And the workouts can take a little bit longer because of that, but the important part of the workout is what you're doing during the working set or the muscle round or the series of loading sets or however you're structuring your training, so that your performance is maintained. And I've been beating the logbook or equaling the logbook, you know, all the way through, and the workouts are getting harder. Nice. They're pretty brutal, you know, but taking longer breaks will help. And the other thing to consider too is maintaining a muscle is easier than actually gaining it. So, just the research generally suggests you can hold on to muscle. Of course, when you're dieting, that's an issue, but, you do have that kind of working in your favor. Gaining muscle is different than holding on to it. So,
okay. Hey, Sasan, have you ever thrown up during a workout?
Once in my life, and I think that was due to a fat burner that I was trying. I think it was a mixture of a fat burner and a really big pre-workout meal too close to leg day.
That'll do it. That's a recipe right there.
But yeah. I have come close to The closest I came was, I think it was a good 8 years ago. We had a really cool personal trainer at the gym I trained at, like a real bodybuilder, and he was known for his legs and his quads. And we decided to do a quad workout together, and it was just the entire session took 45 minutes, and all we did was leg extensions into hack squats. And we progressed the weight on every set. So started off like mid stack, and then we'd do 20 reps and then go straight into a hack squat. And then he'd go, and then I'd go, and then on the hack squat, we'd be adding 10 kilo plates on every set, and got to the point where it was just like we finished the session, but we had to sit and ignore each other for about 40 minutes. And ignore everyone around us, because I thought I was going to throw up. I think my face went blue for a while.
Yeah.
It was just disgusting. Like, and none of us wanted to quit. And I think that was the only time I've really come close to it, to throwing up. It was the higher volume type leg workouts, I think, that get me.
Sure. I'm going to move on here just to kind of keep things rolling quickly. And I'll go to you first on this one, Scott. Is there any value to periodically flexing your muscles through the day? I work a desk job and I'm thinking it's a good idea. You're bringing blood flow to the flexed muscle and perhaps burning calories or keeping your metabolism up.
My only response to this is yes, chicks dig it when you do that. They just love that. Literally, I ran through this question a long time ago. I just put chicks dig it. No, I don't know. That's not your. I would probably say I thought that was a facetious question, to be honest, when I first read it. Yeah, I mean that's I guess you could consider that a form of neat non-exercise activity thermogenesis.
You'd have to do it a lot.
Yeah, you have to do it a lot.
If you're even thinking of doing that, then you haven't trained hard enough.
Yeah, I know.
Because I couldn't think of anything fucking worse than doing that. Like, that would be hell. Like, I'm resting today, and I don't even want to move, let alone flex.
Yeah.
I also noted that you should pose all the time. You're a bodybuilder, right? So act like one. Constantly be doing that. I tell you what, though, here's a sort of a more, I agree with Jordan on this, but a more serious thought is that there are a lot of people that have they've trained for years and they've never competed, but they've done a lot of posing in their mirror at home, and you practice really bad habits.
Oh yeah,
like upper body, like just just flexing their pecs and their arms, and they can't figure out how to contract their legs during their regular poses. So you could end up kind of creating some bad posing practices if you're actually doing that, but
sure.
No.
If it was the case, if you were burning calories, then I think Jordan would have to turn Sasan's diet up sooner, because he already said with all the mirrors in his house and he's looking so good, he's got to hit a bicep when he walks by and stuff. And Sorbet will be here in no time.
Yeah. No.
That's literally a split second.
Right.
I'm just as tired as Jordan on my rest days.
Oh, I'm sure. I've seen the videos you guys have been posting. They're absolutely brutal. And I've got a question that kind of relates to that. And this is cool because this is from Guru Hanza. And when he wrote this question, he didn't write it in knowing that both you guys would be here. So he specifically addressed it to Jordan. But you guys can both comment on this. He says, Jordan, what's it like to share a gym with a freak like Eddie Hall? How is the atmosphere in the gym when you and him train at Strength Depot? Both of you push to the limits of what's humanly possible. Some people would say Eddie is the strongest human being ever, and you do some crazy things with bodybuilding style work too. You can lift some crazy weight with close to perfect form on all exercises that bodybuilders should do. Do you feel that you inspire one another to push to your own limits? And then he adds, for Scott and Dr. Scott, do you guys have some cool stories training in your gyms with some impressive people that do insane lifts?
For a fact, I absolutely know that I won't inspire Eddie in any way. I can assure you that he doesn't give a fuck.
Really?
I don't mean that in a mean way to him.
That
when he's training, like, he is not noticing anything that's going on. I can assure you, like, there could be someone laying on the gym floor starfishing naked, and he would step over them whilst he walks over to do his set, and he wouldn't even see them. So there's nothing that's inspiring him when he's in the gym. He's in his own head, because he knows what he needs to do to become the best, which is very, very cool to watch. Because when I'm in there on days that I'm not lifting, which is a few days when I'm taking Corinne through her session, then I get to watch some of the stuff that he does, and it's just incredible, really. I see him bench 6 plates.
Wow.
See him walk out of a squat rack 8 plates. And he does all these things without spotters, which is interesting too.
Huh.
He doesn't like spotters. He doesn't like someone being near him. So he'll unrack the bench on his own, re-rack on his own. He'll obviously walk in and out of the squat rack, but he won't let someone be behind him spotting him. He never needs that. I think it must distract him to a sense. He's cool to watch. He's an impressive guy, and he's a very nice guy as well, actually. When you do speak to him, he's pretty funny, and he's always got time to say hello and ask you how you are. He's a good guy. I mean, he certainly has worked very hard for what he's managed to achieve this year. So I'm pretty pleased that he's managed to do that.
That's really cool. Sasan, that must be part of what you're talking about when you talked about the atmosphere over there.
Oh, yeah, well, the atmosphere in general, but if you're talking about Eddie and Jordan specifically, I've always been in a gym where I've been one of the bigger, stronger guys. Mm. So it was kind of, there was no, it took away some of the hunger sometimes, you know. There's only so much you can battle in your own mind. Like, I can motivate myself because I love bodybuilding a lot, so I can go train on my own, and if I need to hit a certain number, I can. But when you go and see someone like Eddie Hall shoulder pressing a weight that you can barely shrug, and like Jordan as well, like deadlifting 7 plates deficit with perfect form, it's so humbling that it makes you think, like, oh my god, I have so much work to do. And because I love lifting so much, and right now I'm so obsessed with getting big and strong, it just fires me up no end. Like, I've not had that kind of motivation before, like, for a while, just because these two guys, the biggest, strongest guys I've ever seen, are around me day in, day out. It's humbling. It's knocked me right down a few levels, and it's made me think, right, I am that little puppy that's going to try and prove how strong he is now. Like, I need to grow, and I need to get strong. And that's priceless, I think. It really is. Like, Jordan still, like, some of his warm-up sets are bigger than, are heavier than my all-out heavy set on a lot of exercises. So it's really opened my mind as to how much work I really do need to do. And it's making me work even harder.
That's so cool. Yeah, I can relate only on a small level of, you know, I remember when I was the smallest guy in the gym, and I could look up to everybody. And over time, that gap, you know, it gets smaller. And, you know, honestly, Scott, I watch your videos that you post, and when I think of the big guy doing crazy stuff in the gym, I think of you. Is there somebody in your gym that's bigger and crazy, doing crazier stuff than you are down there in Florida?
I don't pay a whole lot of attention.
Yeah.
I just try to do my own thing. I was racking my brain thinking, I mean, obviously, you know, training with Dave Henry, just, you know, he always could outpress me on pretty much everything.
Okay.
And on back, we were pretty close, and on legs, I could get him on a lot of things. So it was always like, you know, kind of neck and neck. There's so many different dynamics. You can have like really big guys. Like this is maybe Jordan and Corin's dynamic to a certain degree when they would train. And I mean, Corin's just, she's like superhuman. Like she just is unstoppable. She's like a Terminator and just goes and goes and goes and just, you know, like, oh my God. And then you've got, you know, guys that are just ridiculously strong. So you see the loads are lifting and that drives you.
Yeah.
And then you can see people who just like, it's like they don't have any ability to sense pain or discomfort. They're just crazed, and that will kind of drive you. So there's, you know, there are different dynamics, and you know, I've seen some crazy people train. I had a training partner a long time ago. We did this cybergenics program, and it was just insane. But yeah, the thing that popped into my head, there was once a long time ago, I'll never forget this. I can't remember this guy's name. He was one of the strongest raw benchers in the world at the time. And we went down to Nogales, Mexico, to a gym where some buddies, some powerlifting friends of mine, this was in Arizona years ago, were competing. And this guy, this bench presser, was doing a like an exhibition. Hmm. And he was huge, gigantic guy. And he was using just a denim shirt at this exhibition. Maybe he was going to compete in a denim shirt this time. This is before they even had some of the, you know, triple ply super suits that people use now that are, you know, pressing over 1,000 pounds with. And he was a legitimate 700-pound raw bench presser. And this was a small meet. None of the guys at the gym or in the meet, they were intimidated by him. Hmm. And I just wanted to, like, go, you know, just hear what this guy had to say and learn from him. So I've never competed in a powerlifting meet. I really don't know diddly squat about powerlifting, relatively speaking. But I went over and just introduced myself and, you know, just started kind of work my way into conversation. And he needed someone to spot him. So he said, "Hey, you want to spot me?" And I'm like, "Yeah, sure." So I'm like the only like non-powerlifter in the whole place. And I got to spot this guy. And he did like 7:10 and 7:20. And this was like part of his one of his workouts 2 or 3 weeks before his meet. And I'll never forget, because I didn't know what to expect with this guy.
Yeah.
But the way, I mean, this is, I don't think I'd ever spotted someone on like a bench press where I couldn't, because of the angle, I couldn't have pulled that weight on off of him. If he'd have blown a pec, it would have been it. Because, you know, I couldn't like do a stooped forward, you know, rack dead with 700 pounds. So I was kind of like, shit, you know, I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm going to do my damnedest to help this guy. So he lowers the weight and he unracks himself and lowers the weight. And I'm just following on the bar and he goes down to his chest, does an infinitesimally short pause, and he exploded with the weight so fast that I reflexively couldn't even pull my hands out of the way. But for missing the bar, he almost blasted the bar into my hands. It came up so fast. I was like, holy shit. It was like a blink of an eye and he's up to rack position. And then I helped him bring the bar back to the rack.
Wow.
And so the 7:10 went up like that. And the 7:20 went up just like that too. This with the 7:20, I knew it was going on, but I'll never forget that 7:10. It was like all the plates had fallen off both sides of the bar and he just was pressing a bar up. It was incredible. That was like one of the most, because I was right there, you know, and in that kind of pressure cooker with him, and everyone's watching. The whole crowd was standing around, and it was just amazing to sense the power that this guy had. And I wish I could remember his name. I'll have to maybe try to figure that out somehow. This is even before the internet was all that big, so there may not have been any record of you know, him having done that exhibition. But that was one of the most impressive things I've witnessed, like right up close, because just this guy's strength was incredible.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, you know, from my end, and I've seen, you know, a lot of different people push a lot of weight. But I think that for me, it's training with Shelby Starnes.
Yeah.
And it's not just the weight that I've seen him pull, because I've seen him move a lot of weight. But to me, what's more impressive than just the single lift is his level of consistency, that no matter what, every workout, he brings his all. he never takes it easy on himself. He's always 100% focused, and he's always there just to do what needs to be done. I mean, I've seen him flip a switch before where he, you know, we end up doing some type of a drop set or something, and he just goes utterly insane. But more exciting than that to me is that long haul, just for year after year, workout after workout, that he always brings just his A game. He always brings his best. And I think to me that's what's super impressive.
Yeah. What he lives for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So listen, guys, we are unfortunately we're out of time. This has been such an awesome show. Sasan, I want you to please let people know where can they reach out to you. You know, I know that you train people as well. If they're interested in working with you, or for any other reason, where should people go to find out more about you or to get in contact with you for coaching?
Oh, well, thank you. Well, I've got my Instagram and Twitter page. That's just SAS_Herati, SAS_HERATI. I'm always replying to people who inbox me on there. My Facebook page is just Sasan Herati. And my email that I usually reply to people on is sasherati, SASHEIRATI, @outlook.com. So that's my main client email. So if they've got any questions, queries, or they just want to chat, I answer emails every morning. So I'm more than happy. And that's it, really. Thank you.
Awesome. Guys, am I forgetting anything else here?
Sas, thanks for coming on, man. Oh, we appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. I don't think you guys know how excited I've been to come on this show. How much I do listen to it. And I think I said to Scott on the last note, when I met Scott in Body Power, I said to him that over the last few years, I've become very selective with the information that I, or the knowledge that I let into my mind because of the internet and the access to so much information and forums and boards and podcasts. And I said to him, there's only very select few guys that I let influence me knowledge-wise that I actually want to learn from. And this podcast, actually, Muscle Minds, is pretty much the only thing, and including you three, the only information that I'm allowing into my brain at the moment, because I don't want to be influenced by too many different kinds of methods. And Scott said, oh, did you watch my YouTube video on clean thinking? And I said, no, I had no idea. And I think that's what it was. So
yeah,
that's how much value I do hold to everything that you guys say. So it's been really cool having the opportunity to come on this show. Thank you.
I'm flattered now, just like I was when you first told me that, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it blows my mind, man. This has been a great episode. I know that everybody's going to love it. I can't wait to get it out there. So, guys, for Jordan Peters, Dr. Scott Stevenson, and Sasan Herati, IFBB Pro, I'm Scott McNally. This has been another episode of Muscle Minds. We will see you soon. Next time, we will be back with our regular questions. See you then, guys. Wish Scott luck at the Team U.
Good, Scott.
Thanks, guys.
Voices Radio.